KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
Welcome to ABQ Connect. Today we welcome back Shelley Repp, co-founder and executive director of the New Mexico Dream Center. The Dream Center takes what it calls a 360-degree approach to human trafficking prevention, street outreach, survivor services, housing, and long-term support. Its work grew in part from Shelley's own encounters with trafficking victims and her conviction that vulnerable young people are on Albuquerque streets. They needed somewhere to be safe. And Shelley, you bit off a big piece of service and help. I mean, you don't do things small, do you?
No, it's a big bite. It's a big bite because, Jim, it's really complicated. And, you know, we look at problems and it seems like, oh, if there's, you know, this one, like, magic answer. And you know what, Jim? There's really not, because there's a lot of different ways that human trafficking happens. There's a lot of different ways that people end up in vulnerable situations. And so that means we need to be flexible and really willing to see people as individuals.
Shelley, I admire, I know you didn't come here to get flattered, but and I've said it many times, I've known you since you were a pretty young woman. I think you were 15 or 16.
Yeah.
But I admire that you've committed to these relationships. I might differ from you and say that this is less complicated and more long-suffering. You've committed to walking through very tough things with young people.
Right.
Because it takes a while to get them through. And you, yes. You've told me before, you need to, before you're sharing the love of Christ and everything else, you exhibit it.
Right.
And you get them out of the unsafe, terrible circumstance of their life. And once they feel safe, then you have opportunities to share your faith with them.
Right, absolutely. I think it's important that when people have felt needs, it's really hard to hear about things that are kind of higher level thinking, like spirituality, when they're like, you know what, miss, I am hungry and I have not eaten in 3 days. And so it really does look at this, you know, practical side of being the hands and feet of Jesus.
Before we talk about programs or statistics, which I kind of always do that with you, and I'm trying to change this up, take us into the life of a child who becomes vulnerable to trafficking. Don't identify anyone. Obviously, you're very discreet about that and keep confidentiality with clients that you're working with. But how can a child go from an ordinary childhood into a situation where another person is controlling and exploiting them?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because a lot of times when people think about a human trafficking victim, they don't understand that leap from a kid who's in school and then is in a trafficking situation. So, for example, one of the reasons we really started working with young people is because there was a gal on my caseload many years ago who at the time was 19, but she entered into her trafficking situation at 16 years old, and she had been causing some trouble at home. And mom was frustrated and overwhelmed, single mom. There were financial burdens, and there was another kiddo in the house, and this mom was really stressed about the older daughter. And so one day she, you know, handed her backpack to her, and she said, you know what, that's it. You have to leave. You've got to figure this out by yourself. This is tough love, and you can't come back until you can, you know, kind of do all the right things. And so this gal left in her backpack, her wallet, just, you know, a few bucks in there. And she's scrolling through her phone trying to find a place to go. And so she was trying to find friends' houses. Can I stay there? And, you know, she couldn't find a place to stay. We've got two youth shelters in Albuquerque, but you have to be checked in by a parent or a guardian. And parent and mama wasn't willing to even talk to her on the phone at this time. And so she ended up on the corner of Wyoming and Central. And she's still scrolling her phone, trying to figure out what to do when a guy drives up and he's like, hey, you look like you're having a bad day. And she's like, I'm having a terrible day. And he's like, well, you want to come to a party? And, you know, every parent listening to this is like, no, don't do it. But you know what? She didn't have any place to go, Jim. She didn't know what she was going to do. And, you know, was she going to have to sleep outside? Maybe if she goes to the party, she'll find someone that she knows, or maybe it'll even be at somebody's house that she knows. Maybe she can spend the night there. And so she agrees and she gets in the car, and the guy goes around to the driver's side. And so he'd closed the door for her. And when she went to put on her seatbelt, she'd realized he had tampered with that inside panel of that car door. So there was no handle for her to be able to open the door from the inside. And when he got in on his side, he pulled a gun out from his waistband and slapped it on his lap. And she was like, I'm dead. You know, he's going to kill me. And he didn't. He took her to one of the like extended stay style of motels and said, you need to go take a shower. And so she did. And while she was in the shower, he unpacked her whole backpack, laid it all out on the bed. And when she came out, he said, okay, so your name is, and he read it off of her school ID because she had given him a fake name and said, you know, it looks like you live here and it looks like you've got a mom and a sister. And if you don't want anything to happen to them, you're going to do exactly what I want you to do. And that's how she ended up going from a kid who was housed in the morning to a kid who was a trafficking victim by the evening. Less than 12 hours, Jim.
What a terrifying story. This is a mom who, I'm not trying to make excuses, but she can't handle this child.
Right.
And I guess I'm hoping that there's listeners that say, look, Shelley's describing this thing. Obviously, you've been involved with this young woman or you wouldn't know the story.
Right.
So I'm hoping people go, wow, I'd like to be part of New Mexico Dream Center.
Yeah.
NMDreamCenter.org and the ministry and the services that you're providing. So I hope people will go to that website even while we're talking on the radio.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit more about this person's life and where they are now.
Yeah. So she came in as a referral to us, and I was a case manager back then. I wasn't running any programs. I was working for another agency to really kind of learn about how to be a good service provider. And so she was on my caseload. And so I have known her now since then. She was in the program that I worked for, which was a different agency back in the day. 2 years ago, we'd kind of lost contact with her. And then she came in as a referral through the city of Albuquerque because she was needing some housing. And so we reconnected. And she's got an apartment and she's got a dog and she's working on her job skills and some life skills so that she can continue to go forward with her life. And you know what? Here's the thing. She was a human trafficking victim for like 3 years. And there's a lot that goes into that. There's the trauma of the situation, but a lot of times we'll see folks will use illicit substances to numb from that circumstance because that life really, really is terrible. And so she had to really confront some hard things in her life to be where she is now.
And plus this person that abducted her basically threatened her family.
Exactly.
And you could see she still loves her family, which
absolutely
kind of kept her on a leash, if you will, for a short time.
Right. Absolutely. Well, and he would allow her to like contact her mom, but only if he was in the room. So he had to listen to every conversation that she made. And it's, you know, and so it's been a long time coming, but she's really doing well, and we're just really proud of her for where she is right now. She also was one of the few victims we've worked with who was willing to testify against her trafficker, which is a really hard and scary situation because, you know, the New Mexico laws are not necessarily set up to really care for victims well. And so she went out on a limb and she agreed to testify a few years ago.
So when people hear human trafficking, most of us picture kidnapping, kind of you just described it when kidnapping, but it was kind of an abduction, or someone being transported across the border, maybe into the United States. In your experience, how different is the reality?
So the reality is that human trafficking, specifically domestic minor sex trafficking of, you know, American-born people, is something that really happens as an enticement. So like so often what we see is this grooming and recruitment situation through somebody that they know or have some sort of an association with. I mean, it might not be like a BFF, but it's somebody maybe they've met at a party. It can be a family member, somebody that they've even met at church. And so in looking at that, you are looking at people who are predatory people, and they are working on building these relationships to groom that vulnerable person kind of into their care, so to speak. And so when I talk about the, you know, situation we just talked about, that was exceptional in the sense that she was somebody who was on the street for a very short time when this happened to her. But by and large, the majority of the victims we see are victims who have been brought into trafficking through a grooming relationship or because they're being trafficked by a family member, which is just horrific to think about.
This question's not on our list that we talked about
Jim,
before.
I don't know. Are we going to go off script here?
Yeah, I'm going to go off script for a second. I'm thinking out loud. What is the percentage chance, I'm kind of asking this rhetorically almost, that a person that lives on the street of Albuquerque when they're 15 or 16 years old or 10 or 5 is going to end up in a good situation?
In a good situation? Oh, Jim, that's like a like, fraction of a percentage. I mean, it is... It is so, so, so challenging. And the longer you're on the street or your family is on the street, the harder it is to get turned around into some sort of normalcy.
That is just crazy. Shelley Repp, the executive director of the New Mexico Dream Center, nmdreamcenter.org, is with us. We're talking about minor domestic sex trafficking. We'll be talking about people that are in the foster care system. We'll be talking about familial trafficking, which is just an absolutely craziest thing I've ever heard, where families actually traffic their own children. And all of these things are happening in New Mexico proper. Right. They're happening in Albuquerque. And so the faith community needs to know about this going on. We need to know that the New Mexico Dream Center is out fighting. We're going to talk about some of the things you guys do on Friday and Saturday nights, which I still find very scary, but you have people called to do that. And maybe there'll be more people that want to get involved. I've said before, what if we had 1,000 people on the streets of Albuquerque on a Friday and Saturday night? That would reduce trafficking significantly.
Oh, yeah, 100%. That would be amazing.
We'll be back with Shelley Repp right after these messages. Stay with us. We are back with Shelley Repp. She's with the New Mexico Dream Center. She's the co-founder of the organization and executive director. She's already mentioned in our first segment that she spent quite a bit of time working with clients. Is that the right word? Clients that are facing this kind of stuff. And you really learned what you were doing. And God put this tremendous burden for people on your heart.
Right. He absolutely did. I was, you know, Jim, I was just working on a church staff and I was running outreach and had formerly run like children's programming for years, like most of my career. And so this was definitely a different time and God absolutely moved me in a different direction.
In past shows, you've shared with us that you like work with the Attorney General's office.
Right.
And I think Mr. Mays, you brought on, he was part of the Attorney General's office, really did a great job for us in sharing with us. And by the way, you could go into abqconnect.online and you can, you know, type in Shelley Repp and get all the different shows that we've done with her. Very informative information. And if you're listening now and you get an idea, hey, I'd like to work with people and be part of you know, rescuing people off the street, and I'd like to support this organization financially. I mean, whatever God puts on your heart, you can go to nmdreamcenter.org. Shelley, there are laws.
Right.
And one of the things that I think is amazing about you is not only do you have a heart for the people, but you also do really well at dealing with politicians, and you've written legislation, and you'd like to see the legislature de-incentivize traffickers, because right now they have incentives to actually do what they do.
You know, Jim, I think that the way that you put that is just so appropriate, because I don't think we would think about any particular state or municipality having laws or having their criminal code as looking at that as saying they're incentivizing different aspects. But you know what? When you look at it, Jim, that's really what we see. So, for example, in the state of New Mexico right now, if a person is caught and charged with trafficking of a small amount of narcotics, I mean, it's obviously not a huge amount, so we're not talking about a drug cartel, but they're caught trafficking that drug, their sentence starts at 5 years. However, currently, if you are caught trafficking a person, your sentence maxes at 3 years. And so when you look at that, there is definitely an incentive for people who are in the criminal element, that criminal realm, to, it is easier, more profitable for them to traffic a person over and over and over again than it is to traffic a drug. They'll make more money. There's less chance of them getting caught. And if they do get caught, the sentence is quite a bit less. And so we need to really understand that people's lives are extremely important and should be valued more than a small amount of an illicit substance.
Is this inappropriate for me to say? You just said that it is more profitable and less dangerous from a legal perspective for a human trafficker to enslave another human being than it is to sell drugs.
Absolutely. That is exactly right.
We're talking about slavery.
We are talking about slavery. And not only just, you know, slavery in kind terms in any way. These are people that absolutely live in horrific situations and conditions and so often don't have the kind of choice that we have in our lives that we take for granted. They're told when they can eat. They're told what they can eat. They oftentimes have what's called a quota, so they have to earn X number of dollars before they can sleep or shower or eat or any of those kinds of things. And so when we look at this, it is a coercive, controlling situation that keeps people in bondage. And it's horrific that we allow this to continue to happen in our society.
I just can't. I know it's not very eloquent, but this is nuts.
It is. Well, it is. And I think, you know, in thinking about this, Jim, we do trainings about human trafficking, and we love to do them for churches, for businesses, any organization. And in our training presentation, we call it Human Trafficking 101, HT 101, we have a slide that's called the math. And what it is a equation that was put together by one of our victims from a couple of years ago who was involved in a very small local trafficking ring. There were only four girls in that ring, and she had a $500 a day quota. She only had to work 6 days a week. Just think about that. Only 6 days. She got
oh, you get a day off.
You get a day off. But she had a $500 day quota before she could sleep, eat, shower, or any of those things. That was $500 in cash that did not go to her. It went immediately to her trafficker. And so for just her, she was bringing in over $150,000 a year in cash for this one trafficker. Well, there were four girls that were involved in that trafficking ring. So this dude was having a little over $500,000 in cash come to him because of this very small trafficking ring. So the reason I say that is for people to understand that law enforcement is not set up or designed necessarily to always look at this as human trafficking cases. They look at them as prostitution. And so it's the person that's penalized, not the trafficker.
That is absolutely scary. You mentioned a really neat success story. Young woman, she has her own apartment now.
Right.
And you've been working with her for a long time.
Yes.
I know you started working with her with a different agency, but now the New Mexico Dream Center, and she's kind of involved with your organization. What was the turning point in her story? Because what I want our listeners to understand, and you've explained to me in the past, is first of all, the traffickers don't want to let go of these people.
Right.
So you're fighting an uphill battle, and these people may show, I mean, if you're making $500,000 a year enslaving a person,
right,
and Shelley Rep and your other volunteers and other employees come and jerk away this profit center, they can't be happy about that. So what's the turning point like with the example you gave us in segment one?
So in looking at this, I think God does things in the way that he's going to do. And for her, she ended up getting pregnant. And she did not want to abort the baby. There's a lot of forced abortions within the trafficking situation. And she definitely didn't want to stay in there and let her trafficker help raise that baby. And so she really decided then that she had to find a way out. She tried three times. She climbed out of a bathroom window one time and was running down the street and just literally the trafficker happened to walk out and see her. Like, if he hadn't walked out at that time, she would have gotten away. But it took her three times of trying to get out of that situation, and she literally turned herself in to a local law enforcement office because she didn't know what else to do. Like, she just didn't know how to get help. She didn't know that there were people out there that could help her with her situation. And so that is the, that was the turning point for her, was that pregnancy and going, I want to do it. I want it to be different. I can't raise a baby in this kind of situation. And that's what really made the change for her.
So are some of the young people, I kind of want you to talk about the age ranges.
Sure.
But are some of the young people reluctant to go to law enforcement because they're afraid they're going to get be sent back to a family situation that's untenable? Or maybe we should talk about the fact that the foster care system also has a lot of kids that feel like that's a nightmare.
Well, it really is. And so when you've got a young kid, especially if they are like living rough on the street, so they've run away from foster care or they've run away from home because it's just terrible, or they've been kicked out of home is the story that I just told. Those are all ways, or they might have a family that they've been homeless for a while. Well, when you're on the street, you're super, super vulnerable. And you know who the bad guys on the street are? Our law enforcement. And not that we as a society go, oh, they're bad. But when you're trying to stay someplace and the cops come by and they make you move, or you've got somebody in your camp who's maybe dealing drugs and everybody gets in trouble, you know, there's all sorts of things that make them really, really concerned about talking to law enforcement, much of which is then I'll have to go back into foster care. I'll have to go back into a situation that's even worse. And so they generally try to avoid talking to law enforcement. And so trying to get into a situation where you can be safe and start building trust back into law enforcement is something we work really hard at with our drop-in center, The Harbor, which is for unhoused youth. We have volunteers that are law enforcement, and it's, you know, specifically to kind of help bridge some of those gaps so that they know that there are people that can help them.
And just so anybody might be listening, I mean, if you're being trafficked right now and you're listening to the radio, obviously we pray God's blessing over your life and want to encourage that you can escape this if you drop into the harbor. Where's the harbor located?
So the harbor is at 126 General Chenault, which is essentially Central and Zuni. If you're at that intersection, instead of going south on Zuni, you go north on General Chenault, and we're like half a block in.
So if I drop by there and I'm a 15-year-old woman and I've been on the streets for a while, what happens there at the harbor? How is that a benefit to me? Am I going to immediately be turned over to?
No. So we consider the harbor to be a program for people who are 14 years old up through 21 years old. And part of that is because at 14 years old, if you technically want to run away from home, according to the state of New Mexico, you can. And so that means you could be on the streets. And so when you come in, you actually come in through a locked door. So it's not just anybody that can come in. You have to be let in. But then we've got a warm meal every day. We have tons of teenager snacks, hygiene. You can take a shower. You can get clothes. You can get shoes and socks. You can do your laundry if you've got laundry. And you can have a place to relax. It takes a while for somebody who's been on the street to feel like they can trust the people that are in the program. So we want to give them that time to build those relationships and feel like they can ask those kinds of questions that might be harder for people to respond to. And so that's really what it's about, is giving them a safe place to be and to rest and start developing relationships.
Quickly, we got about a minute in this segment. What are the age ranges of kids that you've seen trafficked on the street?
So the youngest kiddo that we've ever seen was 9 years old that we were aware of. We couldn't take them into our program because that was just too, too young. And then up through...
Which legally...
Yeah.
It's too, too... So again, this is a law that kind of needs to change. You can't just leave a 9-year-old on the street.
Right.
But you as an agency can't do anything legally.
We can't. And so with the 9-year-old, we absolutely have to call CYFD. They're not going to likely hang out and still be there by the time CYFD responds days later.
Scary.
Yep. But that's where we're at. So our youngest is 19, and then just up from there.
I just find the whole topic is just, I've talked to you probably how many times in 10 years? I mean, at least three or four times a year. And every time you talk to me about this, I'm like, what is it that our politicians and citizens of our fine state don't get about this?
Right.
This is becoming a bigger and bigger problem. Shelley Repp is the executive director of the New Mexico Dream Center. I am so glad that you're listening today, and I hope as you listen, maybe God's speaking to you about how you might get involved. And there's many ways. Shelley's going to talk about some of those things. She's got some volunteer stuff you can do that you better have some military training. I just find it. It's just amazing the courage that it takes to do some of the volunteer things. But you also might be able to donate clothes. You might be able to donate toiletries. You might be able to help them put together the packs of stuff that they give out. We'll be back with Shelley Repp right after these messages. Welcome back to ABQ Connect. Shelley Repp, the co-founder and executive director of the New Mexico Dream Center, is in studio with me. I'm Jim Williams. Of course, Steve Ryman will be back with you Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this week. I'd just love to talk with Shelley, not because the topic is particularly pleasant, but I just think what Shelley does, she's long-suffering, she's loving, she's walked through scenarios where people have been rescued off the street from human trafficking, particularly human sex trafficking. You know, I might have you delineate the differences between, you know, domestic minor sex trafficking and human trafficking in general.
Sure, absolutely. So when we talk about domestic minor sex trafficking, we are talking about the trafficking, the recruitment, and use of people under the age of 18 for commercial sex. So they are purchased by people through websites, you know, phone calls, all of these different things specifically for sex. Human trafficking in general is a broad term that covers a lot of different types of human trafficking that people could be involved in. So you could have adults that are in sex trafficking. You can also have labor trafficking, which is when people are compelled to have to work and are not paid or are kept in, like controlled situations so that they have to work. They don't have the opportunity to actually pursue.
So Shelley, all of it falls under an umbrella that we've called for many decades now, slavery.
Yep, it sure does. It sure does. That's really the term that it falls under. You're right.
You've got a team. You've got some paid staff. You also have a lot of volunteers. I'm hoping we reach volunteers today. I'm hoping we just talk with people and people. God speaks to their hearts about helping you in many ways. In the success story that you've shared already today, what did donors and volunteers actually do to make her rescue possible?
You know, I'm so glad you asked that because I think sometimes people don't realize that things that might seem small to them are big to us and to our clients. So for this girl in particular, there were several things that came together. So one was we actually had a donor. She was 23 years old at the time. And she had an old car and she had qualified for a new car. And she's like, I'm not going to use it as a down payment, but can you use it? So we had this young person in their 20s donate their car that we were able to turn around and give to this client so that she could get to doctor's appointments, so that she could work on, again, jobs, all of those kinds of things. And so when we think about things like a car donation, you think about maybe somebody who's like super well off or, you know, older and they've got all these cars. This was just this young college student who was like, this is what I want to do. Some other things that happened with this gal is she needed clothing. She needed clothing that was appropriate for the weather. She did not have when she left because she ran away. She left with just the clothes that were on her backs. And so we were able to provide her with several different outfits, including underwear, underclothes, socks, bras, all of those things, so that she was able to have what she needs. And you know what, Jim? I don't have budget for that. I can't afford right. what all of our clients need. And so those were donations that came in from a church. We were also able to help her with getting some utility bills covered. And when she was able to get into an apartment, because her name had been used, identity theft is huge in human trafficking. So her name had been used in all of these other apartments that her trafficker had been in. And she was on the line for those bills. And so we were able to talk to some folks who came in and helped pay those off, because to try to get those dismissed and get set up for utilities was almost impossible because she was still involved in her court case. And so those are just some of the ways that people have donated to help with this client in particular. But through the generosity of so many different churches, Jim, we're a go-to agency for other social service agencies when they need things. Specifically, we've had both youth shelters in Albuquerque reach out to us specifically for underclothes, because we only use new. Like, you don't want to use any used underclothes, right? You're not going to go pick those up from the thrift store. And so, but we have so many people who've donated those new underclothes that we've been able to actually help New Day and Amistad with their clothing banks, because those are kind of some of the things that we need. And again, it's not me purchasing these things. These are God's people who are like, here's something that I can do.
Well, that is so cool. You have a team of volunteers that go out into Albuquerque looking for vulnerable young people.
Right.
There's some steps to this. What are you trying to accomplish on the first encounter?
So with that, it's, again, relationship and familiarity is really, really important. So when we are out on the streets of Albuquerque, we try to have as much as possible the same faces, or at least some of the same faces, so that people recognize us. Because then when they know that you guys, that you're the good people, that you're not going to try to do anything wacky, they tend to talk to you more. And that's where you really learn where these young people are. You don't always see the young people right on the streets, because again, they're going to try to hide and keep themselves safe from all the different things that are out there. So when we go out on the street, we call it our street outreach team. We take with us food, water, and hygiene. And we just want to be the good guys out there. And we've also then got the resources that we can use to be able to give information for young people about the harbor and how they can connect with the harbor, and just give them those opportunities. We have a young man. We don't just serve women at the harbor, but we had a young guy who came to the harbor after like three encounters. He had encountered our outreach team three different times. And finally, on that last time, he kept that flyer to the harbor. And he walked up like on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, and he had the flyer with him. And he said, "Hey, you know, I talked with this gal. She's always out on the streets. And she said, I can get food here, can I?" And we're like, "Oh, yes, sir. Come on in." And so that consistency is what's going to make the difference, Jim. Just like you need consistency in your life, I need consistency in my life. That is the secret sauce out there for outreach.
I love it. Your website, and that's nmdreamcenter.org, says that you give away, you hand out 100 plus hygiene bags. Is that toothbrush, toothpaste?
Yeah,
a week.
Yeah.
And so you need people to put those together. You need the toiletries donated.
Absolutely.
Another way people can help.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things I just want to say about volunteering is, first of all, we have a volunteer training this coming Saturday, and it's long. It's not like just a 1 hour thing. It's from like 9 a.m. till 1, but we'll serve you lunch because we had a donor who's donating the meals for people to come. So that's awesome. But we are really looking at increasing our volunteer opportunities. And part of that is because we are getting ready to open a new house, Jim, and it's going to be opening here in a couple of months. And a lot of what we need to do with that is we need to kind of help our clients get more, we call them service hours. So more things, more services that are going to help them. So those are different classes, those are transportation to appointments, all of these different opportunities. And so with that new house, we have now an increased need for more volunteers. And so we've got some good opportunities within that aren't just going outreach, which we love. it's fun and exciting, but not everybody can do that on a Friday night. So we look for a lot of different kind of people to fill in those gaps that we can't. I can't hire enough staff to do all those things.
Maybe people haven't thought about this, but as you're telling us about all the great things you're doing, if a person is under the held hostage, if that's not an inappropriate way to say it, by a trafficker, that trafficker is providing a phone, a place to stay, food, drugs,
yep,
maybe even giving some affection,
yeah,
maybe in an inappropriate way. And they're simultaneously trying to convince the child that police, parents, and organizations like New Mexico Dream Center can't be trusted.
Correct.
So you have that opposition when you have all these really cool things. How difficult is it to break the relationship they have with the traffickers?
It is tough. It is tough. So we call that relationship a trauma bond because that trafficker is really putting themselves into the situation to provide everything for that person. Even if it's not good stuff, that's what they're familiar with. So when we do have somebody who decides they want to come into services, one of the hardest hurdles is for them to permanently leave that trafficker and that community. And, you know, think about your own community. Like, you've got a good community, and how hard is it for you to just turn your back on that? Well, these folks, it might not be a good community, but that's still what they know. So this is where those personal relationships and those transformational relationships are key. Like, this is where it's super important for them to be able to develop friendships and be able to trust people and go to church with people, have people, you know, go out for coffee, those types of things. Because what we're doing is we are rebuilding a community for folks that absolutely come from a community that would love to pull them back into that situation. So it's really, really challenging. It is why we set up our Eliza Jane House shelter, our stability shelter, because a lot of times when people first come out, they're not ready to live independently, or they're not ready for, you know, some of these things that we look at and say, oh, this is great. You can have your own apartment, or you can do this, or you can do that. They still have too many ties to that past, so they need to have a chance to be able to work through leaving that community behind.
We're going to get more details about the Eliza Jane House and what it means to volunteer for the organization, how you can support them financially. We're also going to talk about children coming out of trafficking and what kind of families they're looking for and how you might become a foster parent and all of those great things. We'll be back with Shelley Rep right after these messages. The executive director of the New Mexico Dream Center, Shelley Rep, is in studio with us. We've been talking about minor domestic sex trafficking. I've always found that to be a bizarre term or description, but it's happening right here in our fair city. We have a lot of kids that are trafficked. We have a lot of kids living on the streets, which is shocking to me. I want to talk to you now about foster care and CYFD.
Sure.
One problem that you've talked about in the past is what happens when authorities successfully identify a trafficked minor, but there isn't an appropriate home available for that child.
Right, exactly. And that is just one of the really challenging things, because law enforcement will do what we call like a call operation, where they will portray themselves as, you know, somebody who's 13 years old out there on the market, so to speak. And so they'll make arrests for that kind of situation. A lot of times those kinds of things will lead towards these investigations where these children, so then you get kids, and then where do they go from there? There is now actually a sister organization, Youth Development Incorporated, YDI, just opened a couple months ago a program called CASA Sunrise, which is for children who are 10 to 17 years old who have been sex trafficked. They're not eligible if they're labor trafficking victims, only sex trafficking victims. It is a like lockdown program, so it's very, very secure, which is awesome. But here's the thing, Jim. This is a temporary holding situation. Like this program is not long term. They look at this as being 30, 60, or 90 days while they're trying to find that next placement for that child. And that's where we really run into just a desert literally, of people that would be qualified or willing to take a child who's had these kinds of things happen in their lives. And so the need for foster parents who have training around trauma, training around what it means to have a teenager in your house is, we need that, but we don't have that in CYFD. We've got a curricula. We would love to train CYFD. We'd love to train, you know, folks on what does it take to be able to successfully have a teenager in your house. My husband Dan and I do foster care. We've had teenagers. That's our preferred age because that's kind of the age we work with. But there's some training involved. And so what happens when you don't have that training is more often than not, that kid runs away and they end up in the same situation over and over and over again. We've worked with a couple of organizations with kids who have been like trafficked in Valencia County. So they were in like Las Lunas. Their trafficker brings them to Albuquerque. They get identified. They get put into foster care. They run away, end up back in Las Cruces. And there's just this cycle over and over and over again. That's just horrific and traumatic for that child. So we really need to look at people who can offer a home that is based on love, that is based on understanding and caring, that's not based on finances, because there's money involved in foster care.
Yeah. I don't know how to feel about this data. CYFD, Children, Youth, and Families Department, now emphasizes trauma-responsive training for foster parents, and approximately 50% of New Mexico placements are currently with kinship or relative caregivers.
Yeah.
Well, based on what you said, that going back to the same family is not necessarily a good thing.
Well, it's not. And not only that, it can also be more dangerous depending on what the situation is. We have seen kids who have come into the foster system because of something's happened with mom and or dad. They end up in a placement with like an uncle or an aunt that they've never met before and don't have any sort of relationship with. And so they end up, it's as if they were a stranger anyways. And so that can be a problem. The other thing, Jim, is that we have a ton of familial trafficking that happens in our state. And so in New Mexico Dream Center right now, we actually have more familial trafficking victims in our program than we have the traditional grooming recruitment.
Tell us
victims.
What a familial trafficking is.
So that is when a child is trafficked by a family member. So that can be a mom or a dad, that can be a grandfather, that can be an aunt or an uncle, but it is somebody in that family that is trafficking that child. And it can happen in a couple different ways. Like one is that this is just that family DNA. Families just do this. But more often than not, what we really see, especially in metropolitan areas, is we see families that have fallen into just absolute chaos because of substance use. They've run out of money. They've run out of resources. And so their child is now a resource that they can sell to be able to have money for more substances.
Have you seen a child that was familial trafficked rescued?
So rescue is a really hard word. And the reason it's a hard word is because when you think of rescue, you think of somebody coming in and
swooping in.
And and that it doesn't always happen like that. What we have seen is we've got in our program children who were trafficked familially, and kind of what has happened is they were initially rescued, let's say, through law enforcement, through something like that, or an intervention potentially with CYFD, but now they're in a program that can care for them in another way. And so in looking at that, yes, I have, but it is also super, super complicated. And it's hard because here's the thing, Jim, you know, you think about your mom, you always want to go to your mom. Even if you're mad at your mom, you always go back. And this is what we see over and over. These kids still want to go see their mom. They want to see their dad. Holidays are hard because they can't. But they still have this feeling because that's their mom. That's
so you've got the faith community listening right now. How could they be involved with your organization, the nmdreamcenter.org, nmdreamcenter.org? How can they how can they help bring love? And I know they can't replace mom, but they can bring love and the affection of Christ to these kids. Is that something they can do through your organization?
Yeah. So we are really looking for folks who are willing to be, we'd call like a side-by-side advocate for that person. And so that is being willing to spend the time to get to know them and developing that community and that relationship, because that's what we all need. And so that is what helps. And so that could be taking them with you to go grocery shopping, helping them learn how to grocery shop. It could be something like that. It could be taking them to church if they, you know, if they want to go to the church that you go to or something like that. We've definitely got things like that. But it really takes those people, it takes a heart to break through a challenging situation and stick with that kid through thick and thin. So we look at mentoring, we look at those things. So I would say CYFD is always a great option for helping kids that may or may not have been trafficked, but they're kids that are in challenging situations. Honestly, you know what, Jim? Big Brothers Big Sisters, they're one of our partner organizations, and they can do a lot of good for kids who really need somebody kind of in their court, in their corner. And Big Brothers Big Sisters is a really big, again, partner that we work with to kind of help with those partnership opportunities.
Well, I know that they can reach out to you through nmdreamcenter.org to work with you, but do you also recommend, if somebody's got on their heart to be a foster parent, do you recommend that?
So I would say you would want to go directly to CYFD. Okay. And so they have, you know, they have a program where you absolutely can do foster care. There's also what's called treatment foster care. And so those are kids that have a harder situation. So that could be special needs. That could be kids like trafficking victims that are going to have a higher level of need. Those are outsourced through private organizations. And so for that, I would say locally, I'd recommend Bear Foundation. And they do, they run a treatment foster program.
What should New Mexico law say about an adult who knowingly seeks to purchase sexual access to a child?
Well, I would say they should not be considered as a misdemeanor charge. How about that? Let's start there. That if you are looking to purchase sex specifically with a child, let's not say that's a misdemeanor, because right now that's what we're looking at. And so we need to look
at... I think there's people listening going, that is unbelievable.
Yeah. So we do not, in general, prosecute Johns. Now, Johns are the term for
the
people
customers.
who are buying sex. Now, with that being said, there will be operations where they look and they do pick up, you know, they'll have an op and they'll pick up several people who are trying to buy sex, and they do escalate charges, because what they're really trying to do is they're trying to get them to... be in more than one jurisdiction. And so that's where you can have those higher things. So if you travel from Grant County, let's say, into Bernalillo County to buy sex, you've crossed jurisdiction. So now your charge can be escalated or elevated. And that's what they really look at doing. So we need to understand that commercial sex is technically illegal. And so there should actually be penalties around that. Whereas right now there's little to no penalty around that.
Shelley, let's say that there's three different kind of people listening right now. One can donate something every month. One can't give a lot of money, but they could give you a few hours as a volunteer. And finally, one owns a business and could donate clothing, food, repairs, transportation, etc. Make it simple for how they get in touch with you and how can they work with you.
Yeah, so... go to our website, nmdreamcenter.org. That's a great way to get involved. And we have a button that's called Get Involved. And in there, there's a short form that lets you give some information about what you may or may not be able to do. And then you're contacted by one of two people. So you're either contacted by our volunteer coordinator, Cynthia Gomez, or you're contacted by Birga Alden, who is our chief communications officer. And you're able to then talk to them about the things that you can offer or that you would like to do to support. We have a couple of other things. Jim, we have our annual Breakfast of Champions coming up in October, which is our largest fundraiser of the year. And so we are always looking for people to help us with that. And then we're going to do a 5K in December. So come run with us. Run against traffic.
Love talking to you, Shelley. Thanks for sharing with us today.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
ABQ Connect is a production of KLYT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KLYT.